I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jan Wong joins me again for over 20 years. She's been one of Canada's most famous and infamous of journalists. Her reporting won her awards, and her famous lunch with column in the Globe and Mail was legendary. In 2006, covering the Dawson College shooting in Montreal, what she wrote set off a controversy that marked the beginning of the end of her relationship with the Globe and Mail. After receiving many death threats, being denunciated in Parliament, and outright racism, it was the abandonment of her newspaper that caused her to fall into severe clinical depression. She has just written and published a new book, Out of the Blue, a memoir of workplace depression, recovery, redemption, and yes, happiness. It's a captivating book wherein Wong narrates her spiral from the heights of journalism in Canada to the depths of depression. Throughout the book, she cites books and people that had helped her along the way. It's a terrific bibliography if you're interested in reading more about depression and grief. The book is also a chronicle of her battles with the Globe and Mail, Manulife, the paper's insurer, and Doubleday, which had been contracted to publish this book before deciding otherwise, prompting Wong to self-publish. Virginia Woolf once said, "Take notes and the pain goes away." We'll ask Ms. Wong if she took this to heart and whether writing this book has helped her. I suspect it'll help a lot of people define depression, notice its signs, and perhaps challenge the stigma associated with it. It's also got the sort of media gossip that's interesting. Jan Wong was last on for her previous book, Beijing Confidential. Her previous books include Red China Blues, Jan Wong's China, and Lunch with Jan Wong. She's won many awards, was at the Globe and Mail for 20 years, and is currently a columnist at Toronto Life and the Halifax Chronicle Herald, and a professor of journalism at St. Thomas University in Fredericton, New Brunswick, where she splits her time with Toronto. The website for more is at janwong.ca. That's where you can buy the book. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program in Toronto today, Jan Wong. Ms. Wong, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
When we talked in 2007 for the last book, Beijing Confidential, you were in the midst of the book tour that I guess Manulife was videotaping.
Mm-hmm.
You were depressed already at the time, I guess? Had the
yes.
symptoms manifested itself?
Yes, I was severely depressed and during that book tour, and I don't remember anything from it.
Yeah.
You say that I was on, that we talked in 2007, totally blank, do not remember anything. I know that at my book launch, the only reason I know that Globe and Mail colleagues came in large numbers is because, of course, Manulife hired Garda Security to secretly videotape the book launch. And I remember viewing the tapes much later after I had sued Manulife and obtained these tapes and being so shocked that so many colleagues from the Globe and Mail were there, because when I was depressed, I perceived that no one from my newspaper was helping me or supporting me. And yet when there was a chance to come out, my colleagues came out to support me. So the manifestation of doing a book tour when you're deeply depressed is very odd, because, and there's another author called Solomon who wrote The Noonday Demon, and he also talks about going on a book tour when he's deeply depressed. And so does William Styron. He talks about receiving an award when he's deeply depressed. And what happens is your memory is gone. You actually can't organize yourself, because one of the manifestations of depression, not for everyone, but a common manifestation, is that you can't cope with daily life. And so on the book tour, I would not be able to answer questions very well, because I'd totally forget what the question was. I'd be in the middle of answering and not know what I was answering. It was quite embarrassing. Sometimes I didn't know what city I was in. The good thing about a book tour is that the publisher always hires an escort, so you're brought from place to place, and that's why I was able to do it. And the reason I wanted to go on it is because my psychiatrist said it's a good thing to do this. Why? He said because you can't go into the newsroom right now. Mm-hmm. The Globe and Mail aspect of your life is very traumatic for you. It's like he never used these words, but I guess it was comparable to post-traumatic stress disorder. To go back into the newsroom really made me feel so shaky and scared. And the doctor said, but this part of your life, your author side of your life, is intact. You don't feel threatened as an author. You can go out and do this, and it's one way to recover by getting partially back into your professional life. It's a safe way to try to get better. And so that's why I did it. And but I do think that depression and the treatment of depression is not understood very well. And that's why there's so many stereotypes and prejudice about people who have depression, that what is the way to treat it? It's people are very suspicious.
Yeah, and one of the things that this book does, and it dispels a lot of the myths about it. I mean, one can go to YouTube and watch videotape of the book tour. I guess you're signing books or
yes,
appearances.
That's right.
Yeah, and I can't find another word, but you look normal. You're smiling,
sure,
and talking,
yeah,
to people.
Yeah, I can smile. Yeah. And with depression, people can always put up a public front. There's a misconception about depression that you can't smile, you can't walk, you have to lie in bed. And certainly there are people with depression who can't smile and lie in bed. But there are many, many, many other people with depression who go to work every day or who can go to a cocktail party and no one would have the slightest idea. Or you can be an NHL hockey player and you can be on Battle of the Blades and smile and skate and do everything. And then you can go back to your condo and kill yourself. So the thing about depression is, and very often with suicides, the people who are left behind are always shocked. They go, we had no idea. And that's because people know how to behave. Like, I know how to behave in public, right?
Yeah.
I can get by. On that book tour in 2007, if anybody had asked me what was happening at the Globe, I would just start to cry. And it happened a few times. I think it happened, I was on the air with Sheila Rogers, and she started mentioning this, and I just started to cry, and we were on the radio. So it's a situation that really needs the public airing. I think by writing this book out of the blue, I really hope that we will start a dialogue about depression, because it's so common. It's one in every five or six Canadians and people around the world will go through this in their lifetime. And twice as many women as men. So I wanted to write this because when it hit me, I was so shocked. I didn't know much about depression. And I didn't believe that I had it. I thought that if you're a strong person, you won't be vulnerable to depression. But of course, what I learned is it has nothing to do with your strength of personality or your toughness or your ability to endure conflict. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the chemicals in your brain. And if there's too much cortisol or adrenaline flowing through, then you're going to get tipped over into depression.
And so how was it for you that you knew you were depressed? I mean, that comes much later, I guess, than when
yeah.
it actually manifests itself, I suppose.
I started to break down pretty fast. I got a death threat at the office. And at that point, I really was already in very bad shape because the newspaper had failed to stand behind me for the story they published
yeah.
on the Dawson shooting. So I felt so betrayed. And when the head of security at the Globe and Mail said, no, we're not calling the police, I received a death threat at work. The lower-level security guard came right away, put on gloves, took it from me, said, we're calling the police. And then 15 minutes later, I was paged. In the newsroom by security, said, you know, Jan Wong, come down to security. So I went in, and to my shock, they said, we're not calling the police. And that was the beginning, I think, of the breakdown, because I thought, why aren't you calling the police? I've had a death threat before, and the protocol is immediately call the police, and any corporation would immediately call the police just to reduce liability. I mean, there's a protocol when you get a death threat, and they wouldn't. And that not understanding why things are happening contributes to your stress and your grief. And so that was a breaking point for me. And because I felt this is the ultimate betrayal. Like, you don't even care if I die. And then it was the racist attacks, too. too. That was the second breaking point, mm-hmm. when I was attacked racially by a lot of people in Quebec. I was called chink, slitty-eyed, ugly, buck teeth. You know, there are many bad words, which I won't say. And they called my children half-breeds, and they told me to go back to China. And they boycotted my father's restaurant, our family business, which had been in business over 50 years, and it went under. And I asked the Globe and Mail to stand up, at least to say it's wrong in Canada and in a democracy, to go after a reporter's family. That it, I felt it crossed the line in a democracy to do that. And my editor-in-chief, I personally appealed to my editor-in-chief, and he said no, he would not do that for me. And that was the second huge betrayal. In this, you know, I accept that newspapers sometimes will tear your stories apart, they won't publish it, blah, blah, blah. I'm good with that. I've worked many, many years as a journalist. I can handle all of that. What I cannot handle is when I'm racially attacked for a story I did for the Globe and Mail, and you won't speak up for me. You will not say that this is wrong. And I just don't understand it. I was the only visible minority columnist at the Globe and Mail. And I felt you have to acknowledge that being a visible minority is one of the liabilities, I guess, of working as a journalist. And you need to know that your newspaper is going to protect you from the racism. And when they wouldn't protect me from a death threat and from the racist attacks, I just really plunged into this depression.
The other thing that happened too, with regards to betrayals by your newspaper, when you decide to take time off because of the depression,
yes.
They didn't believe you.
That was the third and final betrayal. I had worked there 20 years, more than 20 years. I had never been sick. I had never in my entire career at three other newspapers and the Globe and Mail ever had a doctor's note, because I'm a healthy person. And when my doctor sent this note in, there was all this reaction from Human Resources, and they wanted me to sign a paper right away to let the insurer investigate me. And I mean right away. I mean within a couple of days of my sick note, I was getting pressured to let the insurer investigate me. And this first sick note was for 2 weeks. And I agree 2 weeks is a really long time. To me, it seemed 2 weeks was forever not to be in the newsroom. And when they did this, and it slowly escalated into, you're lying, you're not, they didn't use the word lying, let me be clear.
Yeah.
But they said, you're not sick. And they ordered me back to the newsroom. And this happened, and I did go back. I did go back after a few months of being sick. I went back to the newsroom, and I had a relapse. I wasn't completely better, and the treatment was bad. When I went back, there was all this hostility, as if I was as if I was doing it on purpose, I guess is the way I'd summarize it. As if I was being depressed on purpose, to up the conflict with management, and I was stunned because I had no history of depression. I had no history of illness, and I had paid my premiums for disability for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
So to me, it was kind of outrageous that I was being questioned. I gave them all my doctor's notes and all her files. They wouldn't accept it, by the way. They said, we can't talk to your doctor because you didn't sign the authorization form properly. And that was a side issue, because the Globe, through its owner, Bell Canada Enterprises, had imposed a form on the employees of the Globe and Mail, and indeed on all the employees of Bell Canada Enterprises, which was too invasive. It said that we can talk to anybody about anything, about your personal life. And I looked at that, and I could still read even though I was depressed. And I said, that seems a little bit invasive, and there's no end date on this form. There's no termination date. It should say, like, when you're better, of course, this agreement is void.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't say any of that. So I objected, and I wrote in my doctor's name on that form. I said, you can talk to Dr. Al about whatever, you know, you want. because I understand I'm making a claim for illness and you can talk to the doctor. But you can't talk to my neighbors. You can't talk to the teachers at my children's school. I object to that. That's my privacy rights. I agree you have to investigate my claim, but other than that, you know, you can't do that. And so they said because I had written in my doctor's name, I had invalidated the form. Therefore, they couldn't talk to my doctor. It was Kafkaesque. Mm-hmm. They couldn't talk to my doctor, and therefore, they couldn't investigate me. So therefore, I wasn't sick, so therefore, I had to come back to work. And that played out twice. And that the second time was really devastating because I had already been forced to see their doctor, mm-hmm. a company doctor. And that psychiatrist, the company psychiatrist, he was a consulting psychiatrist for them. He affirmed that I was clinically depressed. So it wasn't as if there was any dispute among the doctors. I had my family doctor, my psychiatrist, and their psychiatrist agreeing that I was clinically depressed. And yet, the second time when I had a relapse, they did the same thing. They dumped me off sick pay, and then they fired me.
What do you think, because the Globe and Mail won't say anything about this, other newspapers and media outlets have tried to ask them.
I know.
And they won't say
Isn't
anything.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. What do you think motivated them? Do you think at some point they just got sick of you? I mean, there are probably lawsuits, because of your writing maybe, or they were just looking to get rid of you perhaps that all this happened?
I think it's about ego. I think it's a newspaper really loves a reporter who's a pain in the butt to everybody outside. But they don't want a pain in the butt in the newsroom. So I'm the person who says what I think. I can't be a dual personality. Some people can be very tough in their writing and meek as a lamb in the newsroom. And I just am what I am. And I don't think I caused them many lawsuits, very few. Considering the kind of controversial work I did, I think I was an asset. I think that I was productive. I wrote stories that readers wanted to read. I didn't spend much money doing it. I mean, I didn't lavishly spend on my expense account. I was very cautious about what I did. I had very few errors. You know, it's what you'd want in a reporter. I think I was, like many of my colleagues, we did a good job. A lot of the reporters at the Globe and Mail are excellent journalists, and I feel that I did a good job. What happened? I think it's management. I think it's a corporation reacting the way any corporation would react. And I don't think there's anything special about the Globe and Mail in the way they treated me. I think I've been hearing from lots of people who have been reading the book and saying, you know what, this happened to me. I work for the government, this happened to me. I'm a teacher, this happened to me. I work for an insurance company, this happened to me. So it's a universal story of big corporations stomping on an individual employee. I don't think there's anything special about the Globe and Mail, but what is different is that they are a national media organization that has taken a wonderful stance on mental illness. They have been trying to promote it. But at the same time, of course, they're just a corporation like any other. So you get this really interesting dichotomy. And at the same time, while I am an ordinary employee, I also am not. I also write, and I write for a living. And so that's the confluence of elements, of factors that have enabled this story to be told. And I don't think I'm unique or special. I think a lot of people have gone through what I've gone through. But I had to fight three major gag orders to be able to get this book out. And in the end, I had to self-publish. It's really, it hasn't been easy, and I think an ordinary employee somewhere probably couldn't do this.
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't know how to do it because there's too many obstacles.
Yeah, that's what's frightening after reading the book. Here you are, you have a loud voice, a big mouth, some people might say. You've got a famous name, you weren't destitute. I mean, you had a great family around you.
Yeah.
What happens to, say, the entry-level worker, the minimum wage worker?
They're crushed.
Yeah. And I guess that's what you want to change.
Yes, I want to change it. I was in such a lucky position. You can't choose your circumstances. When they cut off my sick pay, I was really worried because we had no income, but I have a husband, right? Mm-hmm. We can still manage. And my husband was stalwart, and my children, my boys were teenagers. They were, I think, 13 and 16 when I started going through this, so their entire adolescence was just about mom being completely depressed and narcissistic, because that's one of the aspects of depression is you become narcissistic. All you can think about is yourself and your problems. So what kind of a parent was I? And yet my boys weathered it. They watched me, and they became stronger. It was very hard on them, and interestingly, both of them want to study psychology. But I had the unique set. If I was missing any of those pieces, I would have never recovered. And I really felt it was so protracted because the Globe wanted to settle, but they wanted to make sure I never spoke about this ever in my entire life. And that was the one aspect I could not agree to, and that's why it took so long to settle. Because I said, I cannot do that. My sister, who helped me every step of the way, came in for every mediation and arbitration meeting, and there were many. She said, if you sign that, you will never recover. You will always be depressed the rest of your life. You have to be able to speak about it. And I have to say, it's a real joy to be able to talk and to hear from other people who say, you know, thank you for talking, because nobody is talking about this. It's all trendy now to talk about mental illness, right?
Yeah.
It's almost okay to talk about it. What's not okay is workplace depression, because you always have the employer. And the employer, it's like the Boy Scouts of Canada when they settle with any kids who were molested. They're not allowed to talk. It's always the small person, the little guy, who is not allowed to talk. The big organization, like the Catholic Church, they impose all these confidentiality clauses when they make any payout. And that's why we don't hear any stories. And you know what? It's not healthy. It's not healthy for people to not have freedom of speech. Of course, some people don't want to talk about it. That's fine. But it's not healthy if you feel you can't talk about it, if it's not by your own choice.
And in writing the book, was there a little part of you that wanted to get even with some of the people that along the way weren't so helpful?
The first two or three drafts were like that.
Yeah.
And then my wonderful editor at Doubleday helped me. And by the time the book is done, I'm better, and I'm past that. And that wasn't the kind of book I really wanted to write, but certainly the first few drafts were very bitter and angry. And the final book is not. The final book is about, you know, I got rid of that, and I actually kept all those drafts because I wanted to keep that record. So that's there. It's unusable as a book, but I have every little detail written down. That's only for me. That was therapeutic, like just write it down and get rid of it, like someone would keep a journal. But in the final draft, I think it must be the fifth draft, we're telling the story of depression. The Globe and Mail is simply the narrative thread. It's not personal, and it's not, you know, do I dislike these people? Do I hate them? Not really. I don't even think of them. They're not important, and I think I was fairly kind to the editor-in-chief, Eddie Greenspan. He's now, you know, he got fired after a while. I don't know why, but he's now at the Star. And Philip Crawley is the publisher, and I think I was pretty kind to him. And I just, you know, there's certain points in the book where I have to say what they did, because you have to understand the triggers for depression. But that's it. You know, it's not a story about the Globe. It's a story about descending into depression, getting treatment, getting diagnosed, and coming out of it. And that's the important story, is depression is entirely treatable. It's your doctor can diagnose it. We have a wonderful healthcare system in Canada where we have psychiatrists. You may have to wait to see them. But we have psychiatric care available, and we have medications. And I write about taking the different pharmaceuticals and the side effects. And I had to take four different kinds before I found one that worked or might have worked, because by then I was getting better. And I want people to understand depression, that you can completely recover. I've completely recovered. I've got a job that I love, and I write for myself. I don't want to go into a newsroom. I don't think I want to do that. I've done it for 30 years. That's enough. But I love teaching. I get to write. And the most important thing, though, for the last 5 years for me was to get this book out. Because as it was happening to me, I thought, wow, I can't believe this. I didn't know this, you know. Journalists always split into two when something terrible is happening. You're going through it, and at the same time, you're standing on the sidelines going, I think people, this is an interesting story. If I didn't know this, maybe other people don't know this either. And so I think knowing that I was going to write a book was what helped me survive.
Now, does coming out of depression, does that mean that one's cured?
Good question. 50% of people who suffer one major depressive episode will have another. So I asked my psychiatrist, I said, how big is my risk of a relapse or another episode? And he said, none. He said, you won't be among those 50% because yours was workplace. Yours was situational. What happened to you was only because of what they did to you in the workplace. It won't happen to you again. So I'm relieved, but I'm still a little worried. I'm still a little nervous. And so I watch for the signs, which are you can't sleep, you can't eat, you cry all the time. If you start having those symptoms, you must distance yourself from whatever it is that's giving you that anxiety and stress, and you must take care of yourself. So I'm more aware, and I'm not too worried. It's hard though to go up, to talk about this book because we just published it. I have to talk about it a lot, and so even though I stopped seeing my psychiatrist, you know, basically stopped a year ago, I booked another appointment with him just because I was worried that talking so much about it would bring back symptoms. But it's okay. It's not bad. I'm going to go talk to him.
Yeah.
But I think it's okay. And I have to say that talking about it feels so liberating. You know, talking about anything that has a stigma, if you just have the courage to start saying it and look people in the eye, it really is great. And we also have a duty to change things in the society. So there's a kid who's one of my son's friends, and he's going through depression, and he wants to be around people, but he's behaves a little strangely. And so the kids naturally go, well, maybe we don't want to hang out with him, right? Because it's not that comfortable. And yesterday I was standing on my front stoop saying to my son and another friend, I said, you're the next generation. You have to change the stigma. So you bring this kid in, you let him be in part of your group and socialize. He needs friends right now. You need to include him. You need to understand that he's not well, and you must help him. You cannot stigmatize him. You cannot discriminate against him. And you know what? They did it.
Yeah.
They brought in the kid. He hung around. I don't know how it went, but, you know, I said, our generation has screwed it all up. We're still in the dark ages with depression, but your generation should just bring it into the light and deal with it. And I hope that my son and his other friend, his college roommate, that they're going to be different now, that they're going to talk about this and not make it seem embarrassing or humiliating. It's just an illness, and we need to treat it as an illness and stop lowering our voices when we talk about it.
Now, you write in the book that you've gained a new identity. Is it a nicer Jan Wong? Is it a better one, obviously, right?
I think so. I think that I'm more understanding. I know that when I'm, as a teacher, I often get students who say, I didn't come to class, and I'm sorry, and sometimes they're not too polite, right? They send you an email that goes, hey.
Yeah.
And they tell me they are not well, and I actually give them a lot of leeway. I am much more accepting. Other professors say, oh, come on. And I'm not so much like that, and I might have been if I hadn't gone through this myself. And I, so I tell all my classes, I say, I talk about depression just for like 15 minutes at the beginning of the year. I tell them that it's going to be very common. They should watch out for the symptoms and that there's help available at the clinic on campus, and the registrar should be told so that their grades won't be affected. We can put them on a kind of special treatment while they're sick so that they don't lose their tuition and they don't have a bad record. I told them that you have to do it, and as soon as it starts to happen, you've got to deal with it, because when it really hits you, you won't be able to deal with it. You won't be able to pick up the phone or walk over to the clinic. So I think it's made me a better and more sensitive person, and it's because I've learned so much, and I think I'm affecting and influencing people, my students in Fredericton, and I tell them journalism is a fantastic career. You have to also watch, because it's very high stress, lots of deadlines, lots of pressure. We're always being sent in to danger areas. Everybody else is fleeing, you know, Hurricane Katrina, and the media is rushing in to cover it. So I tell them that it's a great job, but you have to understand it will take its toll, and you have to watch it, and you have to protect yourself. And one of the ways, of course, is to have outside interests and to have a family and to exercise, you know, all the things that make sense, but people don't say when you're in the newsroom, right? People sit at their desks all day, and they're totally stressed out. And they're trying to make one more phone call. And sometimes it's good to just get up and go for a walk around the block and then come back and sit down and work.
Jan, it's been nice to talk today. I've really enjoyed this book. I hope this book does well for you.
It's nice to talk to you, Joseph. And I'm sorry I have no recollection of 2007, but I will remember this talk. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The website for more, janwang.ca. The book is called Out of the Blue, A Memoir of Workplace Depression, Recovery, Redemption, and Yes, Happiness. It's author Jan Wang on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plante.